This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. It's now 7:47. You're listening to The Morning Run. We've got the Breakfast Grill coming up just after the 8 o'clock news in about 20 minutes or so with Paul Lim, CEO of Secura Group. Now, we're going to continue our look at young, promising Singapore companies. Secura is another company recently listed on the SGX Catalyst Board, and they provide professional surveillance, kind of homeland security, also executive protection, so like bodyguards and the like.
Yes, yeah? But I think the core business that they want to grow right now is on security consulting. I think at the end of the day, Singapore, everybody believes to be quite secured, and right now they're trying to export their expertise overseas and see how they go there. So in my conversation with Paul Lim, I'll probably be asking him about some of the core threats that is happening at Singapore, particularly the Batam threat that has afflicted, they're supposed to launch rockets out of Batam and hit Marina Bay Sands, and it was foiled. So I want to see if Secura Group was, part of that foiling of that scheme.
All right, so more details on the Breakfast Grill just after the 8 o'clock news. But as promised, Axiata results. Now, they announced their second quarter earnings yesterday. Net profit fell 69% to 189 million ringgit in the second quarter. If you compare that just a year earlier, it was 610 million. Now, the reason for this, according to Axiata, is the higher finance cost charges and also forex losses due to the weaker ringgit. You know, the best person to explain their results is Axiata themselves. And we have on the line with us Chari TVT, Group CFO of Axiata. Good morning, Chari.
Good morning.
Right. So let's start with a look at the financials. Now, why exactly did revenue grow 13% for Axiata, but yet profit fell almost 70%? What explains this big divergence?
Very good morning, and thank you for inviting us for this call. And as you rightly pointed out, the revenue has grown optically. We've done fairly well with respect to revenue as well as in terms of EBITDA. Both EBITDA and revenue have revenue and EBITDA have gone up for us, primarily driven by Ncell acquisition. As you know, as a strategy, we go and acquire companies which are one in footprints within Southeast Asia and South Asia, and we also look for countries where there are less number of operators. In the case of Nepal, there are only two operators. And they are market leaders. So we went and acquired them sometime in April, and they have added about $484 million to the top line in terms of revenue for us. And they're also giving us a fair amount of EBITDA margin to add to our lines. Now, if I look at the portfolio of assets that we have, Celcom had a difficult quarter in Q2 for us, and actually, the revenue for Celcom came down by about 10.2% year-to-date. I'm talking about the first 6 months. The EBITDA margin also came down by about 13.3%. So in the portfolio of us, Celcom didn't do as well as they've been normally doing in the past. Excel has been executing the strategy fairly well. We have some more work to do before we can say that it is out of woods. But for the time being, I think the dual brand strategy is being executed by Excel. And that's working so far so good, but not out of woods, as I said.
So, Chari, would this mean that Celcom and the local domestic businesses would take a back seat? For example, you mentioned in press that edotco would be something that you'd be focusing on to grow their towers by another 10,000 from the current almost 17,000. How big is edotco going to be for Axiata?
Right. Now, I'll talk about edotco in a minute, if you don't mind. Dialog in Sri Lanka for us has done exceptionally well. The revenue grew by about 20.4% for us. EBITDA margin grew by about 18.3%, and profit also went up by 27%. Smart in Cambodia has also done exceedingly well for us. You know, quarter after quarter, they've been doing well. And we have some challenges in Robi. Most importantly, Ncell acquisition is paying off. You know, there are regulatory and tax-related issues that came up as a result of acquisition, but fundamentally, the operation in Ncell Nepal is doing well. As I told you, the revenue they've contributed this quarter is about $484 million, and EBITDA margin, they've contributed about $310 million. Now, looking at the question that was asked was why the profit plunged, right? Although the EBITDA margin went up, revenue went up. Primarily, as you talked about earlier and as we had spoken to the press also in the past, depreciation has gone up. For the first 6 months, the depreciation went up by about $574 million. This will happen to any industry which is capital-intensive in nature. And when the technology moves from 3G to 4G, where you make a fair amount of investments, necessarily the returns are not going to happen immediately.
Chari, we would have to cut you off because we are running out of time. Could you just quickly explain the positioning with EDOTCO as to whether this is going to be the primary focus for Axiata going forward? Thank you.
No, I think a good question. You know, we have a core business called mobile operations, and we'll be focused on that. But we need to probably expand ourselves, the first level of adjacency, obviously, is TowerCo, and we're also creating something around digital services. So we have a three-legged strategy, and we are not just going to be focusing only on mobile operation, although that's going to be the core of what we're doing. With respect to E.co, the primary focus of creating E.co, financially carving out, operationally carving out, legally carving out, is essentially to make sure that operationally we are efficient. That's probably the most important thing. You know, literally about 25% of our OPEX and 20% of our CAPEX is being spent on the tower side. And essentially, by segregating it and giving it to a separate group, we should be in a position to sort of drive a fair amount of efficiency. And I think the current group under the leadership of Suresh Sidhu, who is the CEO of E.co, they're doing an outstanding job in terms of bringing down the cost.
Thank you so much. That was Chari, TVT Group CEO, CFO of Axiata, explaining the results announcements yesterday. Quite interesting times, I think, for Axiata switching their focus away from expansion of their core business, mobile, into the expansion of tower ops. Also quite aggressive targets now. They're looking at about 10,000 towers over the next 5 years.
Now, there's also other reasons why they believe that the net profit actually fell more than two-thirds. This includes earnings because of lower earnings because of higher depreciation and amortization charges. And this is because of their accelerated growth in Indonesia. And perhaps they have to reduce some of the developments there and bear much of the loss of the depreciation in the Indonesian assets.
I think the revenue growth is extremely respectable because we're talking about 13% growth, which is really puzzling because when you look at the average revenue per user, it's been downtrending for some time right now. And even subscriber growth for prepaid customers fell about 10% in the particular quarter. Postpaid didn't grow a lot. So how do you get a 13% revenue growth? I tag this to all the regional acquisitions that they've been making, and those countries in the frontier, right? The frontier markets must be growing quite strongly, in which case the below the line expenses that they see are due to all these acquisitions that they've made regionally.
Now, on top of their regional acquisition of telcos, right, they're also investing heavily in a cell tower company with a huge presence both in ASEAN and in the subcontinent, particularly in Bangladesh, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, and Cambodia. And this company, E.co, we've had them on the breakfast grill. And because of their rate of growth and the need for them to have capital, we asked them quite directly whether or not they plan to list and perhaps seek for greater capital sources outside of Axiata. And as of date, they don't plan to list because they believe that they have the capability to seek for capital from Axiata. But it doesn't take away the fact that they are diversifying their businesses, not only in telcos and regional acquisitions of other telcos, but also in businesses like cell tower, because you can share the cell tower with other telcos as well.
Yeah, so clearly Axiata is seeing this is where the growth is at, right? So they say, okay, we're going to kind of switch our focus a little bit rather than look to expand their core mobile business. This is where it's going to grow, the telco towers.
Yeah. And because the telco towers, like I said, they can share this with other telcos within those countries.
They charge
right?
rent, is it?
Yeah, they charge mm-hmm. rent. You have Robi Axiata in Bangladesh, very, very high density there. And even if Robi can't capture that market because of a lower company market share in that business or in that country, they can lease it out, those towers, to other higher profitability on and companies that have higher market share in Bangladesh.
I think it's really a win-win when you employ towers because you pay rental, but really your cost of deploying towers become much cheaper, and therefore you can focus as a telco on expansion. EDOTCO itself says that they want to increase that, grow their towers by another 10,000 from the current 16,800. So extremely aggressive growth, and for that reason, the capex for Axiata is going to be 6 billion. From the 5.7 billion currently. So a lot of money is being spent on these towers.
Maybank also announced their net profit for the second quarter yesterday. They saw a fall of almost 27% to 1.1 billion ringgit compared to 1.58 in the previous corresponding quarter. Now, the Maybank CEO announced when he was announcing the results, he said that the cause for the drop was due to higher impairment losses.
Yeah, and I think this is because of, not least because of the Swiber impairment losses that they have to write off, but also other impairment allowances. If you think about it, Maybank's allowance for impairment losses actually soared by 680 million ringgit. Right now, the impairment losses is just a touch under 1 billion ringgit, and this marks a threefold increase year-on-year impairment losses.
Well, you know, about the Swiber exposure, Maybank didn't disclose how much it was,
the reserved comment on that.
Exposure they had to Swiber. I mean, yesterday we talked about RHB and how much exposure they had. They had to also, do a one-off impairment on this. So Maybank withholding that information for now.
Interestingly, the CEO, Dato' Abdul Farid Alia, said that Bank Negara may cut OPR again. So Maybank, being the biggest bank in Malaysia, may know something that the rest of the market, they may be ahead of the market in predicting Bank Negara's actions.
And because of that, right, that's why the focus shouldn't be so much on Maybank's balance sheet. People can say that the balance sheet is in trouble. Their P&L is still okay, because if the OPR is happening again, that might improve on their margins. Already we see the group's net interest income, or the group's margin and Islamic income, went up 7.4% compared to year on year. Their operating income for other activities also increased by 20%. So on the revenue side, they are pretty okay. But, as a bank, it's all about the balance sheet. And right now, that is the one that concerns the market the most.
7:54 right now, and Reuters has reported that AirAsia has put a value on their leasing arm at around 4.1 billion ringgit. That's roughly about $1 billion. So this is Reuters got hold of an analyst presentation done by AirAsia in the middle last week, I believe, and found out that they are looking to attract an equity investor to the unit by the end of the year.
And because of that, right, Reuters is actually arguing whether or not AirAsia plans to sell a majority stake in this leasing company called Asia Aviation Capital, AAC. And if the value is at $1 billion, this is very significant, because the company currently has a total market value of about $1.9 billion. So they, in essence, might want to sell half the company's worth in the form of AAC.
Yeah, I think the share price as much reflects that, because it's been on a fantastic upward trajectory recently. I think investors are expecting that this will benefit AirAsia in terms of reducing debt for AirAsia, a lot of debt because of all those planes that they buy for expansion. Any money that come in would help AirAsia.
Okay, well, let's move over to Singapore, where the private banks in Singapore are coming under scrutiny for earning bonuses by selling risky debt. So Singapore has seen an unprecedented wave of defaults, and this has triggered the central bank to say, well, now an industry group will review this practice.
Yeah,
I think this is part of an international trend. We saw that in the United States, where they want banks, they want to look closer into bank executive payments. Bank Negara recently also came up with some rules about staggering bank bonuses. And now Singapore, I think they are very serious in maintaining their systemic integrity. They took away the license of BSI Bank.
Yeah.
And now they are saying that these guys are being paid a lot of money to sell duds. duds, really? What are really boiling down to duds in the bond market?
And on top of that, right, this has worried Singapore quite considerably. When you say that, they shut down Swiss BSI because of the 1 NDB correlation, they also conducted raids on brokerages in a market manipulation probe that has been keeping the authorities busy. There's also the penny stock crash, if you remember, a few years ago, including Bluemont Group, Lion Gold Group Corporation, and Asia Suns Capital. All this is basically a reward of risky behavior, and they don't see the correlation there. If you're behaving riskily,
well,
why have that great pay?
Well, isn't that... Okay, so I'm just going to put out something, an opposite point of view, but isn't the higher the risk, the better the reward, right? So they've taken that risk, so they say, well, I deserve to be paid a high reward for it. I took on that risk, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right, Melissa. And this is very befuddling about financial markets. Sometimes they require a lot. Investors require a lot more hand-holding than normal people. Because if you look at what they're paid, right, 1% incentive. And so far, they have sold about 875 million Sing dollars of these kinds of very dodgy bonds. Mm. So imagine the amount of money that is being made. But I guess Singapore is worried about the buyers too. And these buyers are supposed to be very sophisticated people. So buyers beware. Why put this kind of restriction? I think it's a good question, but still there are very international firms with international pedigree like Fidelity calling for the practice to be abolished. So there you go.
There's also a related news that Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple, it was found that he got about 373 million ringgit dollars in bonuses for the last 5 years.
So is that not extra? I mean, where do you draw the line as to what is an extravagant bonus, right? What is being overpaid? So Tim Cook, I think he celebrated his 5-year anniversary. It was last week. He was 5 years that he took helm of that company. And so, 373 million, is that a kind of justifiable bonus for the head of Apple?
I'm pretty sure if you asked Tim Cook, he would say yes.
Well, if you ask the shareholders whether they're happy or not, since Tim Cook took over, he started 5 years ago, Apple shares were about 60. It went up to about 130, and now it's back down to slightly over 100. So you're still talking about a positive return for the share price. But academics also feel that we are paying our CEOs wrongly because we are just giving them too much money spread over a very long time. I think some people are suggesting that we can give them less by giving them more money sooner. We can give them less money by paying them sooner.
Paying them sooner.
And there is a compensation consultant, Fred Whittlesey. He says that the existing compensation has no empirical demonstrable validity. He says that much of this money has been given because they do not motivate the executive's brain. So he's arguing for a different way of payment.
I think this goes back to our argument about whether you innovate or you profit make in the short term, right? Because a lot of the compensation is share price driven and it's very short term, and that might not be good for shareholders' long-term well-being.
All right, it's time now for the 8 o'clock news bulletin with Nadia Aziz, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.